Is your team not performing well? Is morale low and turnover high? Are you falling further behind the competition? I'm here to help. I'm your host, Shaney, and this is the Leadership Show, where business strategy and culture finally meet, and we make the long-awaited shift from rhetoric to results. I promise I'm not your typical boring leadership consultant, and I will help you get your shift together. Let's do this. Hello, Leadershifters, and welcome to the Leadership Show. I'm your host, Shaney Magoski, and as you should know by now, my mission is to help you, your team, and your organization get your shift together. One of the big ways that we do that is by teaching you how to merge your business strategy and your culture. Today's video cast is going to focus on the culture side of things, specifically what are five major culture killers and what you need to do differently. So that you get the full effect of what I'm talking about, I want you to see culture killers spelled out. Culture spelled with a K because it's so distorting of culture and business results. All right, I'm going to start off by sharing a few statistics with you. Did you know that companies that are on Fortune's 100 best companies to work for, which is obviously a function of having a wonderful culture, their annualized stock market returns are twice that of their competitors and with half the employee turnover? I could do a whole nother podcast on both the quantifiable and non-quantifiable costs of turnover, but we'll leave that for another time. Furthermore, according to a Deloitte Global Human Capital Trends study, 84% of executives rank culture as important or very important. Yet, what do we see out there? That executives, despite knowing how important culture is, and despite knowing what the benefits are of having better cultures in terms of their performance, both bottom line and in the stock market and other cost savings, despite knowing that, and despite knowing how important it is, we continue to see leaders in charge of teams and entire organizations where the cultures range anywhere from mediocre to completely toxic. Well, I'm on a mission to change that. Let's just think about one of this year's culture-killing companies, Nike, right? Where we had women who finally revolted and got the attention of the CEO regarding the many years of gender discrimination and pay gaps and inappropriate behavior that was taking place at Nike. Well, in May, CEO Mark Parker had to apologize to employees after firing a whole bunch of flagrant violators in his senior management team on down. And I want to read to you specifically, he apologized for permitting a workplace culture where some felt excluded and management didn't take complaints seriously. Close quotes. Well, I took a look at what Nike's mission and values were prior to this incident, and let's just see how well they align. Okay, their mission statement, which is still their mission statement actually, is to bring inspiration and innovation to every athlete in the world. And note that here's how they define athlete. If you have a body, you're an athlete. So that would include the women who work at Nike to bring inspiration and innovation. Doesn't sound like being turned down for promotions and being paid less than their male counterparts was very inspiring or innovative, now was it? Looking at what they call the 11 maxims, which are essentially their guiding principles, let's just take a look at a few of them. Evolve immediately. Okay, not evolve to behavior. Do the right thing. Okay, how about what they were doing with a lot of their female employees was exactly the opposite of doing the right thing. And my favorite, remember the man, which, okay, in fairness is a reference to one of the Nike co-founders, Bill Bowerman, but just the wording of that in one of the cultural values in this day and age, I don't know, begs for a change, I think. And then lastly, they had the Manager Manifesto, which was a set of core principles that describe how managers should lead with excellence. And it included principles to lead, coach, drive, and inspire. And again, I contend that the way they were actually doing business and treating women systemically within the organization did not align with any of those things that I just read. Okay, Nike likely had many, if not all, of these five culture killers that I'm about to review with you going on in the culture. And thankfully, it's been at least we think nipped in the bud, but I guess time will tell. Okay, you need to know what these five culture killers are and what to do differently. Ready? Culture killer numero uno: avoiding difficult conversations, not speaking up, and this includes not giving constructive feedback. This is an epidemic in organizations, and I see it worldwide. People are afraid to speak up. They're afraid to have tough conversations. Well, obviously, this kind of poor communication is going to lead to bad execution, misunderstanding, gossip, and other toxic behaviors. As I like to describe a lack of communication or poor communication, it's like the plaque clogging the arteries of organizations. And of course, we all know from health what happens when arteries get clogged in the human body, right? We have heart disease, we have strokes, we die of heart attacks, etc. And we can't let this happen in our organizations. Too much is at stake in this day and age. Yet, we don't have these conversations. We're letting our arteries get clogged. But I am here to tell you that it's not having these conversations that is standing in our way from achieving the business results that we need to. I want to share an example of someone at a company with notably great culture, Google, who did speak up. His name is Dr. Ronnie Zeiger, and he was a physician working on the Google Health business. And one day he noticed that on a Google search of suicide, what came up was so disturbing. It was, first of all, not only disturbing how many people were actually searching on the word suicide, but the very top of the search results were like the top best ways to commit suicide. So he was like, okay, this is bullshit, and I have to say something because this just isn't right. However, know that Google emphasizes that the algorithm is king, right? And speaking up or suggesting that the algorithm changes is anathema in that organization because there was a strict rule that we don't change the algorithm. However, Dr. Zeiger decided, I've got to speak up here, and he brought it to the attention of more senior leaders at Google. And of course, they changed the fucking algorithm so that the top search results for suicide searches were no longer, okay, here's five great ways to kill yourself. Rather, what came at the top of the page after that was a number, 800 number, to the National Suicide Hotline. And guess what? Calls to that hotline went up 9% right after Google made that change. Clearly, this was a change that was not only good for society, but also helped Google sustain its image of innovation, of course. And they've got 10 things we know to be true that the founders put in place in the early stages of Google. And a couple of things I want to highlight: that the behavior of this doctor in speaking up and going against the grain of we don't change the algorithm supports, right? One of them, you can make money without doing evil. And the other one is great just isn't good enough. What the behaviors that he exhibited supported the culture that Google has been trying to sustain from day one. Okay, so what do you need to do instead? Well, give feedback constantly. Don't be afraid to speak up in service of the actual mission, vision, and values of the organization and doing what's right for the customer. And I know it's not easy to speak up. I know it's not easy to give constructive feedback. In fact, stay tuned, Leadershifters, because I am in the process of developing and will soon be filming and launching an entire leadership masterclass on how to give and receive more effective feedback and have those difficult conversations. It takes lots of preparation. It takes great listening. It takes asking open-ended questions. And I'll be giving you a very simple, easy to remember, repeatable, practical tool that can help you have those difficult conversations and give more constructive feedback. It's called the SIP model. You can also read about it in my book, The Better Boss Blueprint, available for sale on Amazon. Sorry for the plug, but I want you to have access to this tool even before the masterclass comes out. All right. Culture killer number two. Leaders who don't walk the talk of the values of the organizations. Nothing makes me hashtag SMH, for those of you who don't speak, hashtag shake my head. Nothing makes me shake my head more than seeing leaders who say one thing and do something differently. It's absolutely unbelievable how often I see that happening in organizations, both just from reading the news and from organizations that I have done work in. Now, what is culture? I define it most simply as it's what leaders tolerate of themselves and others. And clearly, if leaders are doing these things and tolerating these things, that's what the culture is going to be, right? Okay. People will do what's modeled for them. And so if we have senior leaders who are openly not honoring the values of the organization, how can we expect other people to do it? Let's just take common examples that we see in many organizations' list of values that we hold dearly. Okay, honesty and integrity and people first, or our people are our biggest assets, right? Well, if we have leaders who aren't being transparent and aren't treating people with respect, how can we expect our employees to be open and honest and communicative and transparent? And how can we expect our employees to value one another, or let alone value our customers? So of course, we're not going to deliver on that brand promise when we've got leaders modeling disrespectful, non-transparent behavior. One of my favorite role models for modeling behavior, walking the talk, leading by example, is the founder and CEO of Patagonia. You know, the fleece brand is outdoor apparel and equipment brand, and I am a fan and a rabid customer. Well, Yvon Chouinard, as I said, who he's the founder and current still CEO, he codified his beliefs about not only how he wanted to behave, but how he wanted employees of his company Patagonia to behave, in a book that you can pick up right now that's called Let My People Go Surfing. And this is a testament to the fact that he wants people to pursue their passions and to have balance. And Let My People Go Surfing is really a nod to the fact that the company is headquartered in California. And hey, if surf is great, grab your fucking surfboard and go surf during lunchtime and come back refreshed and ready to kill it for the rest of the day. The other thing that he really values strongly is the environment. And again, he puts his money where his mouth is. Patagonia is a company that donates either 1% of sales or 10% of profits, whichever is greater, every year to causes that support the environment. So people line up to work for Patagonia, and they hardly ever leave, and their brand has been able to stay on top despite continued competition from lots of other brands out there. Patagonia, a role model for leaders who walk the talk. Culture killer number three, teams that work in silos. This is also ridiculous in this day and age when we have so many technology tools that can support us in communicating better and collaborating more and sharing knowledge. Like, if we don't, seriously, our cost structures will be bloated because teams are reinventing the wheel. They're not sharing information and doing things efficiently. And ultimately, when our cost structure bloats, of course, our profits, our bottom line suffers, and everybody suffers from that. Shareholders, employees, everybody suffers. So we don't want this to happen. A movie actually is what I think of as a great example of exhibiting the idea of not working in silos, or there's no I in team, that we have to work as a team. If any of you haven't seen the movie Miracle on Ice, go rent it. It came out in, like, I think 2004, and it chronicles the story of the 1980 Olympic U.S. gold medal winning hockey team. These guys were a bunch of amateurs. Like, literally, they were not professional hockey players. They were amateurs from around the country, versus a lot of the other contenders in the Olympics in hockey were true professional players. Well, the coach of this hockey team, his name was, hold on, I want to get it right. Herb Brooks. Okay. The coach of the U.S. men's hockey team, Herb Brooks, was known for riding his players hard. And let's just say they made it further in the Olympics than anyone ever expected. And despite that, he didn't let up. Now, I don't know if this was exactly true to the story, but in the movie Miracle on Ice, there's a very famous scene where, after winning a game, he didn't let the guys leave the ice. In fact, he had them skate suicides up and back and up and back and up and back. I was exhausted just watching it. And these guys were skating up and down doing suicides until they literally collapsed. And it wasn't until one of the guys realized what was at stake here and spoke up and said, "I'm Mike so-and-so from Massachusetts." And Coach Brooks said, "Who do you play for?" And this Mike from Massachusetts says, "I play for the United States of America." And it was at that point that Coach Brooks realized, okay, the guys get it. What's more important than the name on the back of the jersey is the name of on the front of the jersey, which was U.S. motherfucking A. It's such a fun, great movie. I encourage you to watch it because it really drives home the message about what's true in any organization, whether in its Olympic team or a Fortune 500 company or a startup or your own small business, which is the whole does better when all the parts are working towards a shared mission and shared goals. Working together, realizing that, yes, everybody has individual strength. We have to bring that to a teamwork orientation to drive the best results possible. What are you going to do instead of letting your teams operate in silos? Well, first of all, you're going to codify all the ways that you want people to collaborate and communicate. And you're going to communicate this far and wide throughout the organization. Don't just let this be something that lives at the top. Every level of management should be cascading it through their respective organization so that everybody's super clear on what the expectations are for working together. Some specific actions you can take are have cross-functional teams work on all the most important projects throughout the company so that we're getting everybody's input, and different teams have to work together to solve problems because that's the way teams are built. Secondly, take advantage of some of this great technology. Use a platform like Yammer, which is an internal social networking platform to allow folks to share information and tap people all over the company as resources. It's a really great way to get people out of, you know, the tunnel vision of, okay, what team am I on? What business unit am I in? What customer do I serve? And realize that there's so much of a bigger environment out there in the organization. All right, culture killer number four. This is one of my favorite ones to talk about. Shitty meetings. Okay, I don't think I need to explain why that's a culture killer. we've all sat through those ridiculous meetings where, first of all, no one's on time, so the meeting doesn't start on time, and it runs over time, and generally, not much is accomplished. The meeting doesn't start with a clear set of agreements or alignment on what the intended outcome of the meeting is. People aren't engaged. They're multitasking. They're on their phones. It's all the same people who speak up in these meetings, those people who love to babble and hear themselves talk, whereas some of the people with the best ideas, who may be more introverted, aren't encouraged to speak up, and they just sit there biding their time until they can exit stage left on these terrible, terrible meetings. A lot of times, we don't even have the necessary decision makers present in our meetings, which then makes it seriously a waste of everyone's time. What can we do differently? We have got to take more ownership of meetings, whether we're the one running them or we're the one or we're attending them, because we are all attending a vast litany of meetings, aren't we? We need to reevaluate every single meeting. Okay, if it's your meeting, first of all, please send out an agenda in advance. And also send out any pre-work that's necessary in advance to give people the necessary time to prepare. If the intention for the meeting is to have a brainstorming session, well, let people know what you're going to be brainstorming about so they can give it some advanced thought. If in the meeting you expect people to, say, come prepared to discuss what's going on with their top three customers, well, give them that heads up so that people aren't caught unaware in the middle of the meeting and then they're babbling and not giving you the right information. If you need people to read stuff or review stuff in advance of the meeting, send it out. Give people enough runway to be able to read the stuff in advance so that they come to the meetings prepared. Also, in the meeting invitations, be clear about who is an absolute mandatory participant in the meeting, because without their presence, the decision can't be made or things can't be moved forward. And indicate who else is optional so that the meeting doesn't become like burgeon into this, like, you know, small country of participants. What else can you do if you're running the meetings? Well, make sure they're starting and ending on time. Be more efficient with the time. A few tips I usually give clients: schedule meetings for 45 minutes instead of 60 minutes and be more efficient. Or schedule meetings standing instead of sitting so that people are less likely to waste time and they're more willing to get to the point, because it's kind of tiresome to stand on your feet. Another thing you can do is quantify the cost of the meeting. Take a typical team meeting. Who's present? What do you think their salary is? Break that down by the hour. What is that meeting costing you? And is the return on the time worth it? Another strategy I like to use is, going from the 60 to the 45 minute meeting. I've already given you that piece of wisdom. See, I am like getting tired because I've been giving you so much great advice. So now I want to fast forward to, if as a meeting attendee, right, stop attending so many useless meetings. Be more selective about the meetings that you say yes to, and require the person scheduling the meeting to tell you what it's about and give you an agenda so that you know whether it's worth your time. Are you just attending too many meetings in general? Maybe someone on your team would benefit by attending the meetings in your stead, right? Maybe it's a growth area for someone to attend certain meetings and report back to you on it. Maybe it'll help increase that person's profile. Well, give them the opportunity. Don't hog all the meetings. So just a couple of ideas in terms of what you can do if you're just attending too many meetings. Okay, deep breath and a sip of water. Last but not least, culture killer number 5, micromanaging. This is a huge pet peeve of mine. Don't tell people what to do all the time. It is so disempowering and demotivating. It kills people's confidence. It kills any sort of trust that you might have established with people. And it results in a lazy, check-the-box attitude. Nobody wants to go the extra mile when they feel like they're being micromanaged. No one's going to bring their best creative thinking or a spirit of innovation. They're just going to be like, okay, fine. I know what I do is never good enough, and I'm going to have someone looking over my shoulder every freaking minute. So I am certainly not going to give my best effort when I'm micromanaged. I just think about some of the situations that I've had over the years in my career. I actually quit a job where I was micromanaged. I just couldn't take it anymore. I was like, life is too short to work for someone who doesn't trust me. I mean, thought he trusted me. That's why he hired me. And I had to report every little thing I was doing, and it was so disempowering. I was miserable. And I contrast that to some of the jobs where I was given big stretch assignments and not like dictated to every little thing. I was able to use my own creativity and figure things out on myself by myself. And I got to tell you, I learned like 10x on those jobs compared to the jobs where I had a manager who was more of a hoverer. So the old command and control model of leadership is dead and gone. Give it up. We cannot just tell people what to do all the time. Being super explicit like that, yes, maybe it's necessary in certain situations where lives are at risk, but it's a relic of the manufacturing economy where there was like a very specific checklist of things that we did to make sure widgets got from point A in the assembly line to Z in the assembly line. Now that we're in more of a knowledge technology, or sorry, in a knowledge economy, we've got to let people stake their own claims and learn to empower people to do what they do best. As Lee Iacocca said, I hire the best people and then get out of their way. Or actually he said, I hire people that are smarter than me and then I get out of their way. So let's take a page out of Lee Iacocca's book when it comes to avoiding micromanaging. Okay, so let's review, right? Because at all costs, I want you to be aware of these five big culture killers and now know what to do differently, okay? Culture killer number one was avoiding those difficult conversations, not speaking up, not giving the constructive feedback that we need to give in order to truly drive business results. It's often what's standing in our way from getting the project done or achieving those objectives or those KPIs. Number two, leaders who are hypocrites, they don't walk the talk. Like, it is not okay, and those leaders need to be held accountable. Number three, teams who work in silos, right? We need to be communicating and collaborating and taking advantage of those technology tools. Culture killer number four, shitty meetings. It's up to everybody to get better at creating or running meetings and being better attendees at meetings so that meetings are engaging and we're actually getting shit done in our meetings. And lastly, culture killer number five, micromanaging. Instead, we have to take a coaching approach and let people figure it out on their own. We all deserve, you deserve to thrive in a workplace that has a great culture. And by becoming more aware of what some of the biggest culture killers are, now we're on our way to helping our teams and our organizations do some things differently. Finally, Thomas Dewar, who is often quoted because he's known for very colorful quotes, and he's Thomas Dewar of Dewar Scottish Whiskey fame. My favorite quote of his is, "Minds are like parachutes. They only function when open." All right. So let's all open our minds. What can you, what can your team, what can your organization do differently to avoid these culture killers and replace them with what I call culture carriers, right? Cultural beliefs and dictates and behaviors that carry the culture and the organization forward towards achieving those hallmark results, to beating those analyst expectations if you're a public company, to a rising stock price so that investors win and employees who have the stock in their 401k win, and we're all more motivated and empowered to continue to work for those companies that have amazing cultures. Nobody wants to be a case study on Glassdoor getting trashed by former and current employees for that matter. So thank you for joining me today on The Leadership Show. You know where to find me. We'll be back next week with the next edition of The Leadership Show. In the meantime, please reach out to us at hello@theleadershipshow.com with ideas for who you'd like to see as a guest on the podcast, who or what you'd like to talk about on our Friday Fix Facebook Live, or just any little short videos that you'd be interested in hearing about. We love hearing from leadershifters, and it's from your feedback and ideas that we are able to impact more and more people with the topics that are hottest on your hit list right now. So again, thanks for joining me. This is Shaney signing off. Until next time.